I think the campus was in shock to see so many black students at breakfast that morning, because it was like everybody was up. It was almost like it's like, hey, we better get this meal in, you know. And when we started walking over, and once we got in there, it was just I just think I was just full of pride that we were able to come to an agreement and that we were finally doing something. We had talked and talked and talked, and nothing had been done. And it just seemed like we were just going through the motions. But that day, you just felt good when you looked around and you saw everybody. Everybody was in a good mood. Nobody was mad or anything. Even the people who the night before had reservations. You know, it was like, okay, we're in this, and we're in this together.
I had an appointment with the president that morning, so I'm pretty sure I was in his office by, let's say, 8 o'clock. I seemed to be conscious of the fact that the students were gathering on the Algoma side of the Dempsey Hall.
And I remember all of us getting there that morning and going in, you know, with the list of demands. You know, we were asking for him to sign that he would try to help implement these demands at that time.
I remember the expressions on everybody's face of shock and get out of here. You don't belong in here. You want to see you, President Giles, you have to make an appointment. And we're laughing like, we're not here to make an appointment. I don't think any of us expected the response that we got, you know, of just total, you're criminals. It's like, you don't belong here. Get out.
We just wanted to impress upon him why we all came, you know. And that's what we kept telling him over and again. We all came because we all have this problem. And those kids who had heard him say that kept saying, you told us to come if we have a problem. We have a problem. And
but he was extremely angry.
Attitude that he had was, you know, we invited him to sit down first, and he said, no, I'm not going to. So everything was contrary. If we wanted him to sit down, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to make a phone call. Tony takes the phone out of the wall, you know. So it became more and more contentious, you know, because of his attitude. You know, we tried to, do it in a respectful way and all of that, but he wasn't respectful to us, you know, and we thought that we deserved some respect.
His mood set our mood and the mood of the people who were there, because they were like angry, which I'm not saying they didn't have a right to be, but I think it could have been handled a little bit differently.
He didn't really seem to immediately understand what was going on. But he was a strong man and not easily frightened. I would say he stood his ground in spite of the fact that it would have been easy to sign off on the thing and say later, well, I was forced to sign off.
But he made the principal stand courageously or foolishly under those circumstances that he was not going to sign anything under the duress.
Right.
I understood that.
Right.
You know, so time just dragged on And I guess, you know, I was just not being, you know, insistent enough. Now, keep in mind that I did not want to be there. I did not want to be there. I did not want to be involved in anything like that. That was not my idea. I had enough of that in Vietnam, you know, confrontation and that kind of stuff,
yeah.
You know, and in the military. You know, I didn't, that's not what I came to school for.
Right.
I will not sign it. So, well, we'll sit here until you do.
Right.
We'll stay here until you do. And that's primarily what everybody did. You know, we're going to stay there until you sign them. And he still refused.
He was so non-responsive. This was fascinating. It was like, you know, lighting a match in a room filled with dynamite. The man was so inaccessible, so uncommunicative, so shocked, so distant.
Roger wasn't a very personable person. He was more businesslike or a little more remote.
We had the spectrum of people participating, and some were saying, well, hey, this is the last straw. It's either now or never. We take this to the mat. And some were saying, well, you know, he's not ready to sign, so let's go home. And, you know, and so in that moment of indecision, we left as a group. But while we were leaving, we saw there were demonstrations outside.
Somebody happened to look out the window, and it was like there were signs. There were students with signs. SDS supports the Black Student Union, and I'll never forget when he turned around. I was sitting in a pivotal place in the room, and when he turned around and he looked outside the building, I'll never forget this man's face. He turned from white to red.
He could barely see us, let alone hear us. It struck a match in a room filled with dynamite. When we decided, let's go to the top, maybe he'll understand. And we saw there was no way in hell that man could understand or respond. It was just a moan of despair.
It was a moment of release, too. I know I'm not going to be coming back here. They messed me up. You know, they did this to me. You know, they invited me here, and I'm in this predicament. I might be going to the Army, you know, so let me get this out of my system right now, you know. And I wasn't the only one feeling like that. And everybody who felt like that. And I saw pictures coming down off the walls in the halls. I saw glass being broken, offices being broken into, desks overturned.
It was like, oh my God, you know, what's going on here? And at that time we had a discussion, my family had a discussion about all the things that have happened to Black people, and you know, sometimes it's in your soul, it's in your spine, it's in your blood, you know, I guess these days they call your DNA, and there's a point in time when you just can't take it anymore, and you're gonna do something about it, you know. And obviously, that was a collective moment when the betrayal. There was a betrayal there that morning that brought out just unexplainable. I just can't even explain the anger. You know, I was more of an observer, as many of the women were, as we were walking, you know, we were like in shock and awe at what these guys were doing. You know, we were just like kind of like zombies, you know, just walking around watching it. And yet we all like zombies went back to that office.
And they are throwing stuff all around. And the President Giles is outside standing there with Fettinga, I think it was Dean of Students. And, of course, Giles is ashen. He doesn't know what to think. He's just sort of stunned. And at that time, they were adding a new addition to Dempsey Hall. And some of the workers in hard hats came down the hall with wrenches in their hand, and they were just waiting to go in there and, you know, wipe them out, you know. That's why Dr. Lees and I said we could better stay here and see what happens.
I could see a group of people pounding and breaking glass.
How many students did you see? I mean, just estimate. How many would you say were upstairs there near the office when all the commotion was
made? I would say probably 15. And I grabbed the pipe, a conduit bender that had a handle on about like that. Mm-hmm. You know? It was metal and heavy. And I said, you know, instead of them wrecking this place, we could stop it with a couple of guys. And I started out halfway down the hallway, and no one followed.
But you were kind of depressed for a week or more because he was so upset that he couldn't stop it and correct.
Well, it would have taken those three people to stand up from the destruction.
Jeff was impassionate when he was, I mean, the passion in his voice was, you know, you have the power to the president. You have the power to make a difference here. You have a power to tell the truth here. You have the power to tell them that we did not come here to destroy this place or to imprison you or to take over this building. You have the power. Do it. And he looked at us and he said, I cannot do that.
they went to storming out, you know, and we said, hey, this is what we're here for. Come back in. And we wanted to make sure it didn't get out of hand.
And so it was almost like they had almost given up on...
I think some of them were beginning to.
Here's the thing. Like, at that moment, when we went back in there, I knew that all the study that I did that semester was for naught. I knew that, hey, we're not going to finish this semester. We're not even going to be in this school anymore after today. You know, this is a seminal moment in our life up to this point because, you know, nothing's going to be the same after this. Are we going to do this or not? Yeah, let's do it. Here we go.
Bam. You remember feeling that?
I remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember that moment. And that was when the damage started.
And so one of the things I did was say, hey, we're not leaving out of here.
Right.
You know, everybody turn around and go back up, you know.
Right.
And so all the kids turned around, went back up into this hallway and back into another room there. Right. And like a sitting, you know, just sit down and wait.
Right.
And that's when the...
Students were in the hallway, so we just sat down. On the steps hallway. And in the hallway, on the floor, everywhere, wherever you could sit.
By me having been in other demonstrations, I knew the protest songs, and I started singing.
And every now and then, this officer Dish or an inspector Mish would come in and give us a little information. Some of it was real and some of it wasn't. Up until they were tricking us, you know, they kept telling us, well, we need a few more minutes, you know, they're trying to get a certain professor here and all that kind of thing. And then by the time they got the state militia outfitted.
And I remember looking out the window and I was like, my goodness, we are surrounded. It was just like Native Americans and cowboys, you know, it's like, you know, the wagon train is surrounded. Now what you gonna do?
They say, okay, here's what's really gonna happen. Mm-hmm. You know, we have these officers out there and they have riot gear, they have cattle prodders, and they say there's a riot going on outside among the white students. He said, but the police are your protection. They're your protection. They're here to protect you from those other people. Mm-hmm. And they say, what we want you to do is to walk between these officers.
You know, they lined up on each side of the building all the way down and say, you know, you got so many minutes to come out. So we told all the females, because they had these big billy clubs. Uh-huh. You know, all the females go in the back, uh-huh. You know, get in back of the males. Uh-huh. So if they do come in with that type of force, you know, we would take the blunt. Okay. On the force. But it never developed into that.
The sheriff said that if we dispersed now, we would be free to go. Everybody knew that was ludicrous. I mean, everybody knew that was just crazy. So, but Jeff, he said he just said they've got guns, they've got bayonets. We've got nothing. We came here in peace. We must leave here in peace. We must leave here together.
Fact is, there's one good thing about that whole affair, that for some reason or other, all of the black students submitted to arrest with no fighting back at all.
And then walking past the crowd, you know, and they're shouting epithets. And
then they just hauled us all into these trucks and stuff and took us to jail.
Were you scared?
I was terrified. I felt, now you really feel bad because, first of all, you put into these trucks like cattle. I mean, we were jammed in there.
It wasn't until we were being processed that it just sunk in. You are being arrested, fingerprinted, and now you're going to have to call home and let your parents know that you have been involved in this.
You know, I'll never forget saying, Mom, we are all in jail. All of us. We are all in jail. And I said, please go to the bank and get my money out of the bank and come and get me. And she hung up on me. You know, it's like, I did not send you to that school to act like a fool.
What are you doing riding up there? I should leave you in jail. I started bawling. I hadn't bawled up until that time. I started crying and I was so upset. I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life in jail.
No one knows to this day how the students got out of jail, and it was me, because I pulled back at the last minute after the office was destroyed. And then I left the office and went back to my dorm and made a phone call to Father Grubby to tell him that we were getting arrested. Went back to the paddy wagons, which were near the regent's office, and jumped in the paddy wagon with the rest of them. But I had to get that phone call made before I got arrested because no one would have known we were arrested in the newspapers.
Right.
And he came up that same night to get us out.
I can't believe this happened, particularly since I spent 27 years of my life in student affairs administration and a number of those years at a very senior level. The decision was made. By whom exactly, I'm not sure. But it had to have been either the president or the vice president for student affairs or wherever the senior decisions were being made, that the way that the families of the students who were arrested were to be notified was through the residence hall staff. So on Friday morning, with virtually no script other than the students were in jail and a little bit, I think, about maybe how to bail them out, but I can't even remember. I mean, I was not given like a sheet of paper. I got to call the parents of the young men in our building. The responses that I got from the parents were, well, in many cases, they weren't aware of it, what had happened. The reaction, it wasn't like, oh, gee, you know, I've been waiting for this call because I didn't know exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like sometimes a long pause. Sometimes, I mean, I could tell the person was starting to cry. And I have thought to myself, so many times, what were the senior people at the university doing on Friday morning that was more important than letting the families know? And how would these people have felt if they'd have known that, like in my case, a senior student at the university is making a phone call? And this isn't, you know, again, this isn't like, you know, we're doing a phone-a-thon to try to raise money for the annual Alumni Association drive. This is serious stuff about students being in jail and going to be in jail until somehow this all gets worked out.